Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
If you were listening to a lot of the pre-match talk last week, you might have been under the impression that Ireland were going to go to Twickenham, walk all over England, pick up a handy bonus point win, and move serenely on to their second Grand Slam in a row. But not everyone was thinking that way. There was a lone, smug voice in the wilderness. Somebody tried to warn you, and that somebody is keen to discuss his pre-match prediction today. Hey, Kieran.
Hello.
Simon, Ken, how are we?
Very well.
Gives me no pleasure to be so relentlessly right all the time.
Gives you a lot of pleasure, though, doesn't it? May I take you back to last Thursday's Second Captain's Podcast?
I actually think England are going to win.
And we thought Ken was the seer of the group.
How?
I mean, I don't know.
So there wasn't much tactical analysis there. But you got the prediction right.
Are we all suddenly maths teachers now? Like showing your workings is the important bit. No, getting the right answer is the important bit. You know, I mean, if I'd put money on, obviously I didn't, but if I'd put money on my bold prediction, the bookmakers wouldn't have withheld funds, you know, because I didn't have a valid, logical reason.
Does
to...
Does your sense of righteous smugness override your patriotism? Are you happy Ireland lost?
I certainly was not happy. Now, I will say, I was watching with a group of friends, and about 50 minutes after the final whistle, I did say, well, there is... a small silver lining, which is that I did predict this on Thursday. But like
it's the only thing you could think about.
Yeah, but during the game I was absolutely not shouting for England. Just because I on the off chance that I might be right about something.
Stop, you were loving it. Combined with the Scots losing in Italy, this is a dream weekend for you. You were right about Ireland and you're just always
right about
Scotland,
to be fair.
No doubt about that. I mean, you have those guys pegged.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
probably
but tell us about your people. Tell us a bit more. How they're feeling.
About, well, I did...
Murph's turf.
No, I've got some emails. I've got some emails to get onto there. I just want to let Ken know about the great news we've got today, Ken.
Oh, yeah.
Alongside Shane Horgan and Jerry Thorney today on the Second Captain's Podcast, we have none other than Rob Kearney.
Oh, wow.
I know you're always mesmerised by his TV analysis.
Well, he just says so much in so few words.
The pauses, isn't that it? Yeah. As Murph said, I'm Rob fucking Kearney, they'll wait. That's what when you guys were discussing Rob Kearney's pauses.
I mean, it's true. I mean, yeah, he knows he can get away with it.
Well, he's going to be on today. It's fairly clear that England were stung by all the pre-match predictions, Murph aside. Player of the match, Ben Earl speaking here.
Unbelievable, really. I'm a bit emotional because obviously Jamie lost his mum the other week and spoke a lot about that this week, and then Danny's 100th and you know, some of the crap that's been thrown at this team over the last week, you know, apparently we're the worst England team ever, so you know, pretty well for that accolade.
Yeah, Jamie George, the England captain, he was talking about there at the start of that clip, but clearly the criticism, the many pre-match predictions were ringing in England players' ears. Let's blame Jamie Heaslip for this one.
In order for England to win, Ireland have to go down to like 14 or 13 players, and I think England need a couple of trick plays up their sleeve.
Did he speak about, did he make that point on Irish TV, radio? No, he did that right in the Lions then. Five Lives Rugby Podcast for all the English players to hear.
It's great to have a specific scapegoat, isn't it?
Oh, man. 13 men. If you're an England player hearing that the only chance you have is for the other team to have two players sent off.
I think there is a key difference here between what I have slagged off the Scotland rugby team for doing over the course of the last, I mean, who cares how many years, which is that you don't actually hear this talk from the Irish rugby team. And I think that it's an important point to make when people, and there were plenty of them, that maybe weren't shouting for England, but certainly weren't that bothered that Ireland lost in the way that they lost on Saturday, and sort of rushed to judgment about like the entirety of the Irish rugby team and the entirety of the story of this team, which is, you know, that they're bottlers, they're no good, they're chokers, etc. I mean, the Irish players don't come out and say stuff like this, but it's injected into the Irish sporting atmosphere by pundits like Jamie Heaslip. And in the end, you know, it comes back to bite you on the arse. You know, like, I think if you ask the Irish rugby team how good they were, how good they are, the answer that they'd give you would be less strident, less certain of their place in the world than what we were reading all of last week.
Well, publicly it would be, because they don't want to be seen as hostages of fortune. Privately, I think they'd back themselves as the best team in the world, to be honest.
On what planet would they be basing this on? Do you know, like, I really do. Like, the Irish team would speak more bullishly than they do if they actually believed half of the stuff that was said about them last week. You know,
I don't think they believe that they're going to go in and roll over England. I don't believe that. I don't think it got to them in that way necessarily. But I do feel they think that they are clearly they thought they're going to win the World Cup. They think they're going to win a Grand Slam. These are the aims. In fact, I think they've actually stated the Grand Slam is the aim this year.
Absolutely. The aims, absolutely. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, like, look at the last 6 months of these players' careers. No one can say that they've been having a lot of fun. The defeat to New Zealand in the quarterfinal was absolutely heartbreaking, I'm sure, for everyone involved. Last Saturday was, I'm sure, also very incredibly tough for those players. But, I mean, you can't. I think there are two separate issues at play here, which is, one of them is, how good are the Ireland rugby team? And the other one is, when are we actually going to have a realistic view of this team out there?
Well,
because, like the idea that, there is maybe a wider ecosystem at work here even than just the Irish. Because, I mean, you know, Sam Warburton talking about, like, Ireland winning three Grand Slams in a row. And, you know, like, they're the best team in the world. And it's like, what are you talking about? You know, like, this kind of does lead me to think that there is, like a groupthink at play on these islands that vastly overrates the Six Nations in comparison to what that actually means in the broader scope of world rugby. And I mean, like, every 4 years it happens, you know? Every 4 years, the Southern Hemisphere teams get the job done at the business end, and these teams fail. So, like, the idea that Sam Warburton would come out with this stuff, it's actually kind of like...
Yep.
What it is the teams in the Six Nations thinking that they're a lot better than they actually are. And I think, there's certainly an element of that that goes on here in Ireland, but it actually goes on elsewhere as well in the tournament. And, like, let's be real about it.
Are you reading Patrick's email over my shoulder here?
No.
Patrick emails in, when are you going to seriously talk about the talk around the Ireland rugby team? I know of numerous people who are secretly delighted with Saturday's loss to England. These are the plain people of Ireland types, not a million miles from Murph's turf. I find it interesting that Murph is the only one to call an England win last week too, by the way, says Patrick. The perceived arrogance of Ireland's punditry class and the apparent disrespect shown to England for the past 2 weeks was a genuine turn-off for a lot of people. When you combine this with the quarterfinal World Cup loss, it really doesn't wash with these people anymore. Just my observations while visiting home. Make of it what you will, Simon.
I do think Murph's onto something here about a realistic measurement of this team and where they're at. And this group, by the way, if you include Leinster, have lost an unbelievable amount of big games in the last second, either when they're on the attack trying to win it or when they're on the defence and they give away a last second score against La Rochelle twice in a row, against New Zealand, against England, and there's more than that as well. And I think the perception of both these teams, Ireland and England, shifts immediately after this one, because unlike against New Zealand, where we played badly at the start, but we then kind of came back into it and put our game out there for long periods. For this game, besides the two tries, essentially, we were absolutely destroyed. And it's a long time. It's early Farrell era. You're talking maybe 2020, 2021, that Ireland were properly destroyed like this. And there could be shockwaves out of it. And the other thing about it, and we've been banging on about this, but it's obvious, but we have to state it again. The line-out is absolutely fundamental to what's going wrong with Ireland. And the fact that they can't fix it, and the fact that they said after the World Cup, we didn't really change all that much. We just simplified it a little bit. And they kind of defended how badly it went in the World Cup as well, which is, now they can say what they like to us and what they feel behind closed doors, who knows. But there needs a proper, honest chat about the line-out. So take 57 minutes, right? We played badly, but we're back ahead. The line-out is on halfway. We lead by four. We've scrapped our way into this position. Sheehan throws. Byrne is out-jumped or maybe read by Chesham once again. So Ben Earl gets the pass then, steps around a kind of a flat-footed Joe McCarthy, who had a pretty shocking game by his standards. Then past Sheehan, who's a little bit slow to react. And then Lowe misses the tackle. So O'Mahony makes the actual final tackle and then he jumps over the ruck. Blatant yellow, blah, blah, blah. So it's bad from O'Mahony. But there was the shaky line out and then the slow reaction, the bad tackles, to create the position that O'Mahony felt under huge pressure to jump over the ruck. And the Ben Earl try comes from that. So our line out gave them points. It gave them an extra man. It gave them momentum. And the crowd were loud as it was. They went berserk after that. And like, I told you it was just Mark and Peter O'Mahony. So we needed, that was obvious. That was going to happen before kickoff. So for us to not react, not come up with a plan, not bring Kelleher and Henderson on earlier as well. I know we had injuries to the back three, but I thought it was that central to our game to fix the line out. Because we were, everything came from that. All the good, nearly all the good English stuff as well. Now, there's other things like Lowe's clearances, but almost all of it came from our line-out. And it affects our game as well. It's not just the line-out. I thought the rest of Sheehan's game fell apart a little bit. And we say sometimes goal kickers, you know, you can have bad shots at goal and then you're still a good out half. I thought this was one of the occasions where the hooker's rest of his game fell apart.
The line-out also has been going on since pre-World Cup. It wasn't just that it magically appeared as a problem in the World Cup. The warm-ups were a problem and the South Africa was a massive problem. It didn't totally fall apart against New Zealand, but it didn't help.
That was terrible.
It didn't go particularly well.
Yeah, we were under pressure in that New Zealand game as well.
Whose fault is this, though?
Well, Paul O'Connell's the line-out coach, but people are often... Even with your look there, it's like, oof, can you criticise the great man? You've just raised your eyebrows there. Can you criticise Paul?
Well, the very first
we did have an email about this a couple
of
weeks
ago. The very first one, it sort of went through Peter O'Mahony's grasp. So he was relatively near the front. It was a Sheehan throw. And it was either the timing of the lift, the timing of the throw, or the speed of the throw. But it was like a millisecond too fast. Peter O'Mahony probably should have taken it. But you could actually literally blame the lifter, the thrower, or the catcher, all three.
But the coach,
it's actually hard to tell.
But the person who's coaching is the buck stops at them ultimately, right?
Yeah. O'Connell absolutely needs, like there was suggestion either whether we need a Borthwick type. So Borthwick is considered probably the best line-out coach, certainly in the Northern Hemisphere. I don't know about Southern Hemisphere. Maybe you need just a specific, you know, the way you get a scrum coach, because O'Connell deals with other things as well. Just another head in on this. Because it's at a point now where it's losing us games and losing confidence.
Yeah, Sean Curtin emailed in saying something that's been gnawing at me the last few days. Are we really any better than any of the teams that have gone before when you look at what we've actually achieved? We're supposed to have taken the next step and moved on to be one of the best teams in the world, but Leinster aren't dominating Europe. They tend to fall short in finals when it comes to the crunch. Irish teams have won Grand Slams, but no Irish team has won back-to-back slams. When we got a chance to do it the weekend, we fluffed our lines. And I don't have to remind you, World Cup quarterfinal. Mm. But yes, we won a tour in New Zealand, but do you really get anything for that other than a pat on the back? I don't think you can start saying the New Zealand series win didn't matter. After never beating these fuckers for nearly 100 years.
No, a current loss doesn't impact what happened in the past. The last Grand Slam was great, albeit we played badly against England when it was all on the line. We kind of fell over the line against a 14-man England in Aviva. But the away to New Zealand, that's an historic and brilliant achievement. And the rugby we played to do it was sensational. So I don't think you can start scraping away at all previous achievements.
I think there's a context here. You know, it was New Zealand, you know, hired Joe Schmidt on the back of it. Like, they had, like, a national conversation about how this could happen, that they would lose a test series to Ireland 2-1. And when the time came, again, they beat us, you know? So, like, you can't... I accept that at the time that it happened, it was a huge achievement. But it kind of... It is obviously completely demeaned by the fact that New Zealand beat us in the ensuing World Cup quarterfinal. Like, of course it does. In the same way that all these Leinster wins or Leinster losses in champion. I mean, it is for to a large degree the same team. The Leinster team is, you know, like they are, you know, it contribute hugely to the Ireland team. And so, like, there are two things. There is obviously a lot of chat this weekend about this team. And for people to say, well, you can't call the Ireland team bottlers, forget about it. It's just, you just can't do it. Forget about it. They won the Grand Slam. You know, don't be ridiculous. See, talk like that doesn't wash with people.
But hang on, why are other countries lose a match and it's not fucking national mourning and it's not like this team are bottlers, chokers? Why can't a really good team?
We're not there though. We're not in Wales. We don't know what the Wrexham football fans talk about when they talk about the Welsh rugby team, and we don't care. Like, the fact of the matter is,
it feels bizarre to me that any of the very rare Ireland rugby defeats are treated as
not a
personal affront to people.
They're not super rare.
I disagree that the series win New Zealand is demeaned because we could have gone there and lost, and we definitely would have lost a World Cup quarterfinal then. Either way, we were going to lose a World Cup quarterfinal. You have to go and win these matches. We all grew up watching New Zealand beat us time and time again. The idea that you could ever go over there and win
I'm not saying I'm throwing it out. I'm just saying it is obviously demeaned.
Unlike humor, I haven't given up on this Irish rugby team.
No, and I haven't either. But
people are definitely ready to hate the rugby team for some understandable reasons of kind of the imagery attached with it, and because the private school and like 90% of them and all the rest of it,
etc.
Yeah, that.
Well, some people just. Yeah, I think there's also a lot of people who just get very invested. Say World Cup time, like the figures are off the charts for the Rugby World Cup. The viewership figures, I think. Yes, there are loads of people who want them to fail. There's a lot of people who probably during a World Cup want them to succeed and get built up and get excited and then feel almost personally let down and insulted by their repeated failures at World Cups. And that probably does then carry into any subsequent defeat.
Yeah.
But, you know, back-to-back Grand Slams is a pretty high bar.
But I think that there is an issue at play here, which is on RT television before the Wales game. So before the Wales game, right? There was a conversation had between Jackie Hurley and the pundits, and basically it was a discussion about what an amazing achievement back-to-back Grand Slams would be. And this is, you've won 2/5 of the second one of these, and we're talking about back-to-back Grand Slams. And then the World Cup is thrown in, but it's thrown in such a way as to be, some people might mention the World Cup, but it's actually unfair to mention the World Cup because it's a totally different competition. Sports fans are watching this going, What on earth are we talking about here? You know, like, first of all, the back-to-back Grand Slam hasn't been won. It hasn't even been half won yet. And it turns out it wasn't won. No. And also, you can't take out the World Cup. Like, you can't. I mean, you know, you just can't do it. I mean, I've been using this phrase quite a bit over the last couple of months. But apart from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play? Like, you can't just excise the World Cup.
Yeah, you also can't just live in the World Cup the entire time. You have to move on. And it would have been an amazing achievement to win this back-to-back Grand Slam. Unfortunately, we haven't done it. And now next weekend, I mean, it is a choke job if we go and lose to Scotland. That's a bottle. If you fail to win a championship,
it's an amazing achievement to get two championships back-to-back if we do it. And it's a massive capitulation and a total readjustment of what we think about the Irish team if they lose to Scotland.
Completely. You wanted to say something there, Ken?
England, France and Wales have all done back-to-back Grand Slams.
Pre-Six Nations.
England 3 times.
Mm. Yeah, so I mean, this is in the Six Nations iteration. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, the competition is actually 150 years old. And we haven't won that many of them. So
we won very few championships, by the way. 15
I'm not
ever.
For a moment being churlish about how good this Ireland team is. But I just... Like, it keeps happening, you know? Like, the idea that it could happen this year, so soon, I'll mention it again, after the
but
World
say
Cup.
It keeps happening. Losing a game keeps happening.
No,
we lose the odd game. So does
but
any
this
any
is
really
a terrible
team.
England team. Like, they played really well on Saturday. But you play as well as you're let, you know? And, okay, you can say whatever you like. But the fact of the matter is, this England team had nothing going into this game.
Yeah, the pre-match smugness of the many of the pundits was a problem, be fair.
I don't see why it should be a problem. I mean, how about just performing the way that, you know, living up to your own hype? How about that?
Yeah. Fortunately, the English players also heard that punditry. I think it might have fired them up beyond anything I've ever seen from those lads before. Anyway, Ken, we've left you waiting long enough for your man, Rob Kearney.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Because there's an incredible gun off here.
Yeah, my apartment's going to be stacked full of lads.
There'll be 10 lads coming over
For the whole thing, so it's going to be absolute carnage. It's going to be absolute carnage.
Absolute carnage.
It's going to be absolute carnage.
Absolute carnage. We'll be stacked full of lads. We've got to be 10 lads coming absolute over. Carnage.
Simon, I don't know what you're doing toweling off there. Keep that top off and hit that bong one more time.
Jerry Thorny has dropped into the studio. Hey, Jerry.
Good, thanks.
And we've brought together the Virgin TV punditry dream team of Shane Horgan and Rob Kearney. Shane, how are you?
Good. Great to have Rob on board here. He's been following me around my whole career. Great to have him on second captains.
Rob, how's the form?
It's great. I can't tell you how happy I am to be on second captains.
Yeah, you both sound like you're really not happy to be on together here. Yeah.
They've had enough of each other, haven't they?
This is behind the scenes. You know, there's a lot of animosity between myself and Rob. We keep a little.
Yeah. You haven't even been on much on Virgin Reasons, but you will be on. And what was supposed to be a Grand Slam decider, Rob, it's not going to be now, or a Grand Slam match for Ireland. It's not going to be a Grand Slam for anyone. What went wrong at Twickenham?
Yeah, I think lots of things went wrong, didn't we? We got bullied up front. I think first and foremost, the pack got outplayed. Our discipline was poor, and it's not really something that we have associated with this team over the last few years. Generally, our discipline's very good. You could argue that England could have beaten us by more. They were poor off the tee. George Ford, unusually for him, miss a lot of kicks at goal. I was at the game live, so I haven't got to watch it back yet, but their disallowed try, I thought, could have gone either way too. Credit where it's due. England were very good on the day. They beat us up. They played a lot more expansively than we have seen from them in the last few years, I think. And they put us under pressure. And, you know, it's a stark reminder for us that if we are just a little bit off the pace, any team in the world can turn us over.
Do you think all the pre-match stuff either got into our heads at all, that we got a little bit complacent, or, well, I think I know the answer to the second part, did it fire England up? Because it certainly seemed to do no good for us in terms of England's psyche.
No, it never does any good for the team. And ironically, when, you know, I've been in those positions before when you're on the team and you're just thinking, lads, will you shut up? You're just giving the opposition really good fuel here.
Never.
And there was no doubt, there was an awful air of complacency within the country for the last week. Now, I don't think it doesn't creep into the team, but then, you know, subconsciously at the back of your mind, is there there before these big games that you think you just have to turn up? I think this team is good enough and professional enough not to let outside noise affect them. But there is no doubt that England were absolutely more fired up for this game than any they have been in the last while.
Did we underestimate England, Shane, do you think?
England played better than they have done. I don't know if that necessarily means that we underestimated them. The issue here is actually not... Yes, there's a tactical element to it. But I think you both have hit the nail on the head when it comes to the sort of the other element of it, the non-tangible, the emotional, the how sort of, you know, committed you are. And, you know, I spoke last week about, I have a very, very strong memory of when we played South Africa in two tests. I think it was in 2004 maybe. And we got beaten in both of them. They were coming back in the autumn to play us, and Jake White was, you know, he was asked about would any Irish player get into the team and into their team, and absolutely not, and he wouldn't want any Irish players. And that was the sort of narrative that they were just coming over to roll us over. And it was probably the most sort of fired up sort of non-English game that I ever played in my life. And that was right across the board. All, like, everybody had a sort of a personal, you know, passion and commitment to that game that was unusual. And we turned South Africa over as a result of it. I felt there was great analogies between the English side. Like, we were all doing it. Not that we were saying that, you know, that you know, Ireland were perfect or that it was an absolute shoe-in, but it's very, you know, it's legitimate to say if Ireland delivered their best performance and England would continue to play the way they're playing, Ireland would win the game. But this other intangible wasn't taken into account. And Ireland can't, and no team that's hugely successful can rely on that sort of level of passion every single time. You can't do it. You don't have resources or stores in that way. But what you have to do then is deliver an incredibly accurate currently accurate and professional performance. And Ireland didn't. They got you know, steamrolled a bit in the pack. Particularly Earls was you know, so fantastic in that regard. And then, you know, there was, apart from a couple of really nice pieces of play, which they were great play for both Earls, Lowe's tries. They lost concentration at different times. They were not off the line as well enough in defence. I think they got surprised a little bit by the width that England played at on occasion. And they exited for the last, you know, the last few minutes when they could have exited in a better way. They failed to exit as well as they could. So they didn't deliver, you know, anywhere near the top end of their performance, passion or emotion aside.
Jerry, do you think, and this isn't with the players and it's not on the players, and as Rob said, if anything, it might be a subconscious thing where they're just slightly off because they're kind of wondering, how could we lose this game to England? We're 12-point favourites. Everybody's telling us we're the best team in the world. But just in terms of the punditry and the general reaction in the country, it's almost like we wanted to try on this arrogance thing. You know, we're the best team in the world. Other pundits in other countries are telling us we're the best team in the world. Let's just have a go at being arrogant and see how far it takes us.
I don't think so. No, I don't think that's in that team's...
No, I'm not talking about the team. I'm talking about kind of the punditry generally in the build-up.
Yeah, maybe. We've certainly become a little bit more entitled as a rugby nation. We've become a bit very expectant of this team delivering big wins and winning silverware and so forth. And they went over there as 12-point favourites of the bookies. And I myself said Ireland by 10 to 15. I woke up on Saturday morning and why the hell did I say that? We know that Jamie said that, you know, Ireland would need to be reduced to 13 players for England to win.
Oh, we've played that already.
And I think Simon Zeebo said Ireland would win by 30 plus, you know, etc.
Stringer said that not one England player would get in the Ireland team. And you can hear what Shane said there. That sort of thing really would.
This was representative of what I was hearing from other rugby fans.
Yeah.
Just your day-to-day rugby
fans. Yeah. Perhaps that's so, and it served to stoke them up. It was a bit like the shoe being on the other foot, listening to Shane there. You think of all the time England have come over to Dublin looking for a Grand Slam and expected to win a Grand Slam. Like in 2001, they were averaging about 40 or 50 points a game, and they came to Dublin and got beaten. And it was Ireland the lap of honour, and England got presented with the trophy. And it was very much the shoe on the other foot for... I don't think it infiltrated the team at all, this misplaced arrogance. I don't think so at all, to be honest. But I do think Shane's right in that there were elements of the performance that suggested they were a little bit rattled by how well England played, whatever about the occasion and the atmosphere, which was the best that Twickenham has known in probably 5 years, along with the best rugby performance England produced in 5 years, which is a backhanded compliment to Ireland, because Ireland are now the green machine when they roll into town. That's the kind of performance level they inspire. Ireland are the hunted ones, like never before in history. And I think that it was evidenced, particularly in what Shane says about the defending, like the lack of line speed, even for that last line at move, the way the team, like 11 of them in a 10-metre radius, honeypotted from the counter-attack that led to the George Forbank try, and you end up with Tadhg Furlong and Jameson Gibson-Park defending the edge. That was very indicative of something that Andy Farrell had identified at half-time. He told us that they weren't trusting the players on their outside, that everybody was trying to problem-solve on their own. And it continued in the second half, which suggests that they were a little bit rattled or something, more so by the occasion and maybe by the way England played. Certainly, Shane is right, we haven't seen England play like that in 5 years, not since they beat the All Blacks in the semi-final.
Mm. Yeah, Rob, what about the idea of pressure and how this Irish team deal with a good team playing well, just as they didn't deal with it great against New Zealand in the World Cup quarter-final? there was a phase of attacks around the 65-minute mark, if you remember this, Rob. It ended up actually with Ian Henderson getting turned over with kind of a slow, predictable carry. In the build-up to it, though, there'd been two or three bad passes, one from Henderson himself, actually, that went to ground. But we looked aimless, directionless, and just unrecognisable from the attacking team we've seen over the past few years. And it's hard to put that down to anything else besides pressure. And at the time, actually, Donal Lennon on commentary said, that's England's pressure defence. But I watched it back again, and England actually weren't coming up too fast. It was actually us sort of passing around and not really knowing where to look for gaps. And again, kind of looking for runners. Like, it was that feeling of, where is Joe McCarthy? Where is Dan Sheehan? Where are big runners that we expected to fire? It wasn't even that they were carrying badly. They weren't carrying at all.
No, it was a combination of so many different things. So, the pressure definitely does play a part. And Twickenham is a hard place to go, and it's tough to win there. You know, you go into those games and 5 or 10 minutes in, and you get a real stark reminder, Jesus, maybe this game isn't going to turn out how we had planned. I think England defended very well. You know, the amount of times we had to truck Bundy up because we were under pressure, we couldn't get those passes away. We didn't get to really exploit them on the edges, bar a few opportunities for James Law's try. We didn't push the ball and the boundaries of our attacking play like we had done. These are the things that happen when your pack get put under pressure and when your pack get bullied. You don't have the same quick ball that this team love playing with. This team is at their very, very best when our pack is dominating the opposition. We're moving the points of contact. We've got three or four multiple different options at the line every time, and that what allows us to get to the edges. And we didn't see that from them this time. And a large part of it, as it always does in rugby, starts with the collision area. And if you're not getting over the gain line with that quick rock ball, it makes it really difficult to try and play your game plan.
The collision area, Rob, and the line out, which really is a problem now. I mean, I know it went well against France and Italy, but Italy didn't even really compete. We lost a load of line outs against Wales. It was a
France
big problem
didn't
at
pick
the World
Cameron
Cup.
Hockey, they had no real defensive line out.
And again, like, we knew a Steve Borthwick coach team who picked a load of line out jumpers were going to have a go there. It seems like this. Is there a fundamental problem there, do you think?
I don't think it's bad enough yet to call it a fundamental problem, but it is a problem that keeps rearing its head in these big games.
Is that not a fundamental problem, though, if it just keeps, no matter what we do, we keep fixing parts of it and then another part will break down?
Yeah, but listen, I think with the quality of opposition like England at the line out, they're going to get one or two against us. You know, we can't expect to win 13 from 13 lineouts every single week. So there's going to be times when a scrum goes wrong, a lineout goes wrong. You know, it wasn't the reason that we lost the game at the weekend. Yes, there's big moments when, you know, you want to back your line out, but our set piece isn't strong enough as a team just yet that we can nail our colours to the mast and say, at that big moment in the game, is it going to come good for us? And then that's a little seed of doubt that's going to continue to be there. And because it went poorly at the World Cup, it's probably a reason now why there is more scrutiny under. And Shane always makes a really good point. If there's a perceived weakness over your lineout, whether you have it or not, teams are going to go after you more. And they will use that as an area to try and exploit to get one against you.
And Rob makes a point there that I think is really important. Everybody has a game plan, by the way. Do you know what I mean? They aren't. It's this idea, because we're so focused on Ireland, so we're looking at what everything Ireland does, and, you know, if everything we do isn't 100% right, we think, oh, that must be some failing with us. These aren't sort of passive teams that have just come to, you know, be part of our bandwagon to a Grand Slam. They're teams that have identified their own strengths and possibly our weaknesses, or where the two dovetail, and they go after them in a big way. So, you know, it's unsurprising that it wasn't a cakewalk for Ireland, you know. So I think England developed their performance. It's about, as you said, I think it's probably the best performance I've seen from them in 5 years in many ways. But there's no comparison between the type of performance it was and their semi-final against New Zealand that I'm always going on about in the World Cup. In 2019, you know, that was just playing on a different level. This is a very, you know, combative, passionate, well delivered performance. But but it's by no manner of means, you know, so in excess of what Ireland were doing that Ireland shouldn't have won the game. Ireland should have won the game. You know, the fact that they got beaten in a last minute drop goal shows they should have won a game, and nobody would tell you that they were playing their best rugby or even close to it. So and Ireland can't be reliant on playing their best rugby every single game to win these, you know, to win every game. Because, you know, you don't always have that. You have to have your standard deviation has to be really high, so you don't drop massively in performance. And in fairness, that's the way Ireland have been over a long period of time. But it's unsurprising that, you know, that England put up a tough test in Twickenham. And I think, you know, to the earlier point, sort of how we analyse Ireland now and how we view them and our expectations of them. We can't be given it the old, ah, shucks, it's only us, it's only Ireland. We're going to, you know, we're the underdogs going over to Twickenham and sure, you know, we'll do our best and see what happens. Everybody smells that, you know, it's, you know, they smell it, that's rubbish. And we are, you know, have this massive, long, unbeaten run, aside from one game in the quarterfinal against New Zealand. We've been beating France away, been delivering sort of, you know, really good performances. We have to accept, and everyone has to accept, that we are going to be the favourites in the vast majority of games. And that is not always against England, but under the circumstances that England were in and the development stage they were in versus the development stage of Ireland and Ireland performances over the last few weeks, it was entirely correct that Ireland were favourites going in.
Yeah, absolutely. And Gerry, I agree. England were brilliant, their best performance since 2019 World Cup semi-final, and all the rest of it. Their attack was on another level. Like, hard to believe it was the same team from the last couple of years. But for all that, we managed to get ourselves into a winning position a couple of times, obviously. And a bit like, you know, when you'd play New Zealand back in the day and you'd feel like you were totally on top of them and you go in at halftime behind because they were opportunists or whatever. We were kind of in that same position, being completely outplayed yet ahead on the scoreboard three times in the end. And I just wonder from that point on what we did wrong, particularly that end game. A lot of people were criticising Conor Murray for the box kick that went to about the 10-metre line. So England had a line out. There was a big delay as Jack Conan tried to fix his shoulder, and from that point on our defence was very passive and kind of summed up England's attack and Ireland's defence. We looked porous, we gave away easy yards, we went for the choke tackle on Tommy Freeman, so it was a kind of a basic pass wide from the English back line onto Freeman, and then we went for the choke tackle and we honestly gave away 10 yards and didn't make the choke tackle, which doesn't happen anymore. Refs don't want to give a choke tackle, and we kept chasing it, and then they went blindside. Bundy was a bit slow to get to Feu Boso. But what do you think about Murray choosing the box kick with a few seconds to go? Well, it wasn't really a box kick, it was a clearance kick, and also our defence from that point.
It's a very interesting one, because going back and looking at it, James Lowe kicks long to halfway. That's the first exit kick. But not a touch. And Ben Kay says, oh, he should have got that off the pitch. Ireland could have done with the breather there. But he gets good distance on it. And then again, England finds space on the edge, I think. But they come back and it's a turnover. Ireland, Gibson Park tackles, we need to touch. And so Ireland have the line out. And there's a break in play. As one of their players goes off injured, I think they're finished the game down to 14 men, isn't it? Cunningham South goes off injured, and there's a break in play before the line out, and there's 2 minutes to go. And Ronan Keller wouldn't be known particularly, especially as a world class brilliant darts thrower in the kind of Rob Herring school or whatever else. And the line out, as we thought, was creaked, and you're kind of half watching this last line out through your fingers. But he hits Henderson with a brilliant throw to the tail.
Keller was brilliant.
Excellent.
Made a massive difference. Yeah,
really good. And he's had a really good tournament actually off the bench. And then Conor, remember now, the Irish team have gone into conclave at length while this injury delay before that line out. And when the ball is then at the bottom of the ruck, Conor Murray says to the referee, we stood inside the 22. The referee confirms as much, and Conor Murray finds touch. All of which tells me that that was the agreed plan, that was the agreed exit strategy in the huddle. That they're just going to pin this one on Murray. Yes, he could have got 10 metres more. He's had better, got better
it
distance.
It wasn't a bad kick.
No, it wasn't. And who's to say England wouldn't have scored, given Ireland's defence got outflanked like they did, if the line had been 5 or 10 metres further up the pitch anyway. And you're right about the defence. I've spoken about this before. The ball comes to the front of the English line, so it's number two ball, and there really should be, I'm sure the lads would agree, better line speed from Ireland going up there. Instead, they check on the gain line. It's a little bit softer on the edge. And like I said earlier, Andy Farrell identifying the players, and Simon Easterby did as well, that they were trying to problem solve too much on their own in defence and weren't trusting those on their outside. And then Lowe comes in off his wing to try and help with the choke tackle. He gets the honeypot again, driven towards the ball and the space on the edge, and Bunyaki ends up defending the wing, and Faye Oboso gets clear, and you sense from that moment on.
We were toast from that point, because he also made yards after contact.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was, you know what, it reminded me of Marseille. It was just a grim sense of inevitability that they were going to score by whichever means. And if Marcus Smith hadn't dropped the goal, I'm sure he would have kicked the penalty against Tyburn.
Rob, what did you make of that end game, Ireland's management of the last couple of minutes?
Yeah, there's a lot in it, and you can argue so many different ways forward. Listen, you hold on to the ball for 90 seconds and you're on 22. Referees are looking very hard to try and give a penalty away from you. You go ceiling, you go off your feet at a breakdown. That is one thing that they are very hot on. So I think the decision to kick was the right decision. I know there was a call coming from the touchlines to get it off the field. It wasn't a bad kick. It wasn't a great kick either. You know, another 10, 15 metres there is well within Connor's arsenal. What would I have liked to have seen done? A pass back to James or Jack and boot it 60 metres down the field, and you chase as hard as you can. You play one person in the backfield, you 14 in your front line, and you just make them play out of their own half. You know, 70 meters is a long way to go to try and get a try. We went for the choke tackle, I think, three times. Jack and Robbie Henshaw went for it twice. They were so close once. Ben Earl hits one of them like a steam train, and another second, and they had that turned over. You know, when they went over to the other side, Bundy gets caught in the edge. James Lowe comes in to try and help with the tackle hold up, and he's not really doing anything. He's shouting at the ref with his hands in the air looking forward when he should have just stayed in the game, got back to his edge, and they wouldn't have given that soft space for England to go on attack. And then, you know, Tig over the ball underneath our own post. That's a difficult kick for Marcus Smith to kick, because I think the James Lowe penalty that he gave away was only 5 metres from the touchline. So as soon as Tig goes, and the ref gave him 3 or 4 warnings over the ball to let go. Now, whether he didn't hear, probably not when your head's in there, but you'd want one of your teammates to pull your scrum cap and pull your head out of there. So, you know, I think we probably could have managed it an awful lot better. But in all of that, we would still back this team, and they would back themselves to be able to defend for 90 seconds a set piece move on their own 10-meter line.
Rob, I know you have to get on there. Sorry. So I just want to ask you one more question about the next few days now and the psychological sort of impact on Ireland. Because back in 2019, when England came to Dublin and beat us, it seemed to have quite an impact. Like, it seemed to kind of set us back a fair bit. And I don't know if it's too much of a stretch to say we never quite recovered in World Cup year that year. Is there any fear with this short turnaround before the Scotland game that it could be too short a space of time for heads to clear?
No, I don't think so. Listen, they'll be feeling sick today, and they'll have to analyse it and look it back, and it's not going to be pretty. But they are very lucky that they still have everything in their own hands, and there's a championship to play for that they can win. Now, there will be a small seed of doubt, because there's always a seed of doubt after you get turned over the week before. And Scotland are probably the one team that you don't want coming to town, because they will fire everything at us, you know, led by Finn Russell. They have a brilliant backline who can attack from all over the field. You just never know what you're going to get from Scotland. And while they were beaten last week, this is one of those weeks that Scotland could produce their very best performance that they've done in years. It's not something you'd put past them. But it comes back to the same old point that this is a really good team, okay, this Irish team. And are we a great team? I don't know. You could argue that now after our World Cup and that big game at the weekend, but we are a better team than Scotland if we play to our potential. And I think that will still be the driving message this week within the group. Let's not panic. If we do what we're capable of doing, we'll win the game.
Rob, we'll watch you on Saturday on air with your sworn enemy, Shane Horgan. In the meantime, thanks so much for chatting.
Thanks, lads. Cheers, boys. Good luck.
Brilliant stuff from Rob Kearney there. Shane, something you wanted to ask Shane?
Yeah, Shane, just on that end game, if we could go back to it. It's okay to win games while playing badly. And when you're in that position, I think really great teams, as we aspire to be and sometimes call ourselves, still win that one. What did you make of it?
Yeah, that, those last maybe 5 minutes or so, however long it was, after Ireland got their score, was sort of a microcosm, I thought, of the whole game. Ireland looked tight, and there was we spoke about the pressure coming on from England, the aggression in the line speed, the aggression in their carries, slightly surprising width, but nothing that was too shocking. They haven't met before, but you know, Ireland were slightly off, and that was demonstrated in our passing. There was no sympathy on our passes, and as a result, there was balls going on the ground that you would never see. You know, I think Bundy took one nearly in the head in the N22, which is the, you know, which is exactly the point position where he normally takes the ball. If there was a pass was slightly better, he gets over the gain line in a massive way, and then actually Ireland are on and they score tries in that position. So you flip back to the last few minutes of the game when that pressure came on, Ireland weren't exiting in the way they have done at any other point in their championship. And you know, England are part of that, but more so than anything, it's, I think, Ireland are part of it. They were tightening up. They weren't carrying as aggressively as they were. They weren't carrying quite as wide. Their tempo was slightly slower, and so even for the low kick, which was actually a brilliant kick, he got some massive length on it. The couple of phases before that weren't as impressive as we have seen at other times. So. You know, I think there is definitely some criticism of Murray, and maybe it's not. It's an extended criticism of you know, the game plan there, in that maybe it wasn't the best idea to kick the ball off the field. I think Rob makes a good point. You kick that very long, you get a 14 up in the line, or certainly 13 plus 13 and a half plus one. And then you really challenge the opposition to you know, go the length, or you go, you know, 60, 70 metres without making a mistake. I think that's tricky. You go off the field there, what happens is, you know, you tie up forwards, and you know, there's more space to attack. But you know, whatever about you know, putting yourself in that position, I was desperately shocked by the line speed for Ireland off that. England shortened that line out, I believe, and then went around on that corner, you know, went to the soft corner, and Ireland gave them far too much latitude. They gave them far too much momentum. So one, they had eaten up a huge amount of yardage, to mean they were deep in the territory of Ireland anyway, and that ramps up the pressure with everyone that's doing that everyone's playing, and it leaves the opportunity for the drop goal open to you. It also heightens the pressure, knowing that it's 100%. You give away a penalty there, it is going to be it's going to be likely be kicked, and then it's the actual momentum that provides. So they flew into that first ruck, and the ball was super fast, and it becomes desperately difficult for Ireland to defend it. So what we have seen, and I suppose this is not sort of unusual, or it's usual to some degree, that when the very biggest pressure comes on, both from the opposition and the circumstance of the match, you know, Irish teams, like any other teams, can tighten up a bit, and you have to manage that.
It's a very interesting point that Rob makes as well, and I agree with Shane that probably the bigger crime is the defending off the line out than the decision to whether kick long or kick for touch. It's easy to pin it all on Conor Murray kicking the ball off the pitch. The only thing I would, and I can understand why the rationale...
By the way, his previous box kicks, as bad as one of them looked, the second one actually resulted in us getting the penalty that got us up the field for the try.
And interested that Rob also heard the tic-tac coming from the sidelines, as well as in the huddle on the pitch. So it's clearly a collective decision for Conor Murray to kick for touch. And I guess part of the rationale was, if you think back, two long kicks by Gibson Park and Lowe, both to halfway, both within a metre of the touchline, ended up in two of England's tries. So they didn't want that to happen again, even though you can understand Rob Kearney's Rob's rationale for kicking long. And the reason why I probably tend to agree with hindsight 2020 vision, agree with Rob, is put yourself in England's position. Put yourself in England's position, Shane. If Ireland are 2 points down at home, they've got one last play. Do they want to be taking a kick inside their own half and going off the hoof, or do they want a line out to plan their strategy, to plan their next move?
Have a great line out, by the way.
And launch off that. There's no doubt that if you're in England's position, that's the preferable option, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a really strong point. And whatever about development of a game plan from set piece, which would have been a massive focus of England over this campaign, because it's the thing defence first, and then your set piece is the most teachable or most manageable period of the game, or most the area of the game that you can develop most in the shortest period of time. But we all, everyone, the dog in the street knows what's the most difficult area of the game to develop, and that is multi-phase attack. And by talking that out, you can see they wouldn't have wanted to be in that situation and much preferred to have been given the set piece.
Shane, what about Peter Armani and his captaincy? Are you more worried about his overall, generally anonymous performance or discipline, or do you think he did fine?
I think he didn't have a brilliant game, but he wasn't the only one who didn't have a bit of a brilliant game. The performance dropped. What we can't get into, I don't think it's helpful here. We've got one game. Ireland haven't always played brilliantly, but they've done exceptionally well, and largely they deliver good performances. Peter Armani has largely delivered good performances, even recently has delivered good performances. So let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater here. Let's see how Ireland react against Scotland. Let's see how Peter reacts against Scotland as well. And let me tell you, there's a couple of hugely important fixtures for Ireland. And I think, real touch points for Ireland in the summer against South Africa. The Scotland game, they should win it. It won't mean anything, actually, if they do win it. And that's unfortunate.
I hear championships are still massive.
Yeah.
I don't get this.
I've a given that Ireland are going to win this championship, aren't they? I think they're going to.
I think there's massive jeopardy here now. I genuinely think there's huge jeopardy on this game.
Well, they really shouldn't be losing to Scotland, honestly.
No,
they really
shouldn't be losing to England.
They should not be. I do think, right, so I said it at the weekend, there's 4 years to the next World Cup. Can't answer any of those questions about World Cup performance. But what we can do, and what Ireland will be judged on, is the biggest games in the Six Nations. And they are France away and England away. I don't think Scotland at home is one of those biggest games. And Ireland should really be winning this game. If they don't, then actually there's a more legitimate questions to be asked. And maybe, Peter is part of that conversation or not. But I think we see Ireland and Peter through to the end of this campaign in the summer against South Africa. And then there is, the guy is at the very tail end of his career. It's completely legitimate to sort of project forward and see what he can contribute to Ireland in the immediate term, because that's actually, all you can really focus on. But, not based on one game against England.
Yeah, I just hope those quotes don't come back to haunt us if we lose to Scotland. It is a game we should be winning probably. So, you don't sound too impressed by Peter Mahoney's captaincy or performance.
Well,
I
think people, especially after losing to England late on, people want to lash out a bit and definitely look for a scapegoat. And and Murray didn't play great. His main issue was his passing, to be honest with you, more than his box kicks. One of them was a terrible box kick. But Danny Kerr, for example, came on and had a far worse game.
Exactly. England,
oh my
completely
God.
Overlooked because it's his 100th cap and fair play, and England won.
Yeah. He had two long aimless clicks, the chip kick that was blocked. Gave us three opportunities
absolutely.
To get back into the game.
They'd lost that game, the review in his performance would have been altogether different. It's all called scoreboard analysis, isn't it?
Yeah, and the thing about O'Mahony, right, he didn't have a good game.
No.
Itoje was essentially marking him in the lineout, so we couldn't even go to him for several of them because Itoje has as good a spring. He's one of the few people who has as good a spring as O'Mahony.
Influence grew, didn't it, in the latter stage of the game? It really grew.
I thought he was brilliant. The rip on Gibson Park as well. Yeah. There's his pass for the try. But the fact that he wasn't having an impact in the lineout. He isn't a carrier. He never was a great carrier, and he's now kind of not carrying at all, essentially. He doesn't make many tackles. So you're relying on him poaching, which he didn't do, and he didn't even have many nibbles at it. So I think he knew he was having a bad game and then tried to chase it. But what happened is that lineup that we lost, Ty Byrne was outjumped by Chesham, and then Ben Earl rounds Sheehan, who makes a bad attempt at it. Lowe makes
Tyke Byrne is blocked by Alex Mitchell.
Puts the hands up. But already by then, Sheehan had missed the tackle. Then Lowe missed the tackle. But it's actually O'Mahony who makes the tackle on him then.
Brilliant tackle. Brilliant recovery tackle.
Brilliant tackle. And who knows, probably maybe even a try after that if he didn't make the tackle, because Earl is so fast and so brilliant. Yeah. He was sensational. But he then, I think, is essentially chasing his losses. He's sort of like, I'm not having a bad game. They've just made a break from a poor lineout by us. And then it's as blatant as you get, like it's a blatant yellow card. But the idea of blaming Peter is off, because he was the one that made the tackle. B was a gamble that arguably could have, should have needed to be made.
Tyne Byrne made one in the first half and was rewarded first. That could have gone against him. At the end, he's paying.
And see, we had 6, 7, 8 chances after that to still win the game.
Yes.
As we just talked about at length in the end game. So I don't get it. Now, I do think he's probably under pressure for his place. I think Kelleher could come in. I think Henderson could come in. There could be quite a few changes. Our issue, Jerry, is the lack of depth in the back three. HIAs for Frawley and Nash.
The 6-2 split. Yeah, which we didn't was raise. Always your concern, Simon. Yeah.
Well, that exposed it. That really exposed it. That's the inherent risk if you get two injuries in your amongst your back, two injuries in your back line by the 5th minute and the 45th. That means you've got to do something like shift Gibson Park to the right wing, and he did remarkably well, not least for the pass for the try when he knew he was about to get smashed onto low. And you know, he even had a couple of jinking runs, made one good read, like he's
took
such
a high catch.
Yes, that's right,
he's an incredible rugby player.
Incredible rugby player. So like, but it's still one of the risks in the 6-2 split as well, is that when you look at the impact Marcus Smith could have in the game, and it was significant, even though I thought George Ford played quite well, despite leaving 7 points to the tee. He straightened the line beautifully for the Ollie Lawrence try. It's a nice bit of play, he really does. And he calls the shots and pulls the strings for the Furbank try as well, when Ireland honeypot towards the ball that time. He did okay. He left 7 points off the tee. But by and large, I thought he did well. But it meant that Gary Ringrose was sacrificed, and we had no real X factor amongst our backs, because we had to have cover for both a goal kicker and an out half, so Kieran Frawley had to be on the bench. And I would imagine Gary Ringrose will come into the 23, whether he starts on the right wing or they go back to 5-3 or he's on the bench. It just seems a waste not to have a player like that in your match day squad.
Yeah, we'd no counter attack. That was the other thing that I thought England really deserved the win. Their counter attack was brilliant.
Furbank
was ready for Lowe's long kicks. Well, that was clearly a
strategy.
You've
got to say Borthwick was completely vindicated in picking him ahead of Freddie Stewart and picking the winner as well ahead of Daly.
But if you were to sort of distill the difference between the teams, I thought the two counter attacks, we essentially had none. I don't think we tried any. Crowley once sort of half ran it back, but it was just to recycle at a ruck.
Yeah.
Whereas almost every time Furbank got the ball, he looked dangerous. He looked like he wanted the ball.
Yeah.
Whereas I didn't think our back three looked like they wanted to run.
Well, had to be reshuffled, of course, for Kieran Frawley. Initially, Frawley came on the right wing, I'm pretty sure, for a couple of minutes, but that was quickly abandoned. So Hugo Keenan was sacrificed in the right wing. And of course, that means Keenan is our primary counter-attacker, is one of Ireland's best players, and he's kind of wasted a little bit in the right wing, even though he made that superb catch in the build-up to Lowe's first try. So that's another weakness in the 6-2 split, maybe, as well. It just reduces your options there. And then Keenan had to be sacrificed from fullback, which really did, you're right, completely limit the Ireland's counter-attacking.
If you do enough 6-2s over enough games, you're going to get caught out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, backs get injured. That does happen.
It does. And yet, of course, it was a huge success, particularly in Marseille and against Wales.
Yeah,
the two games. Like, hard to equate that Irish performance on opening night in Marseille with last Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you think the Scots are going to be doing? Speaking of licking wounds, will there be a dangerous animal come next week after the Italy defeat?
Yeah, I think they will be. Yeah, I think they could. Sorry, no, you can't predict anything with Scotland. Probably only Scotland could beat England and then lose to Italy. It's such a Scottish thing to do.
If only they'd beaten France and come back there. That would have been more hilarious than the fact that they lost Italy.
Like, Fabian Galthié is the luckiest coach in this tournament. Yeah. Like, he should have been 0-3, and now he's got a clutch of new young players are turning down.
Could win the championship.
Yeah. He's a lucky man. But the Scots. You're asking me to predict the Scots, the enigma wrapped in a riddle that is Scotland.
Pretty much.
I think they certainly could be dangerous on, for sure. They've got to be really wounded by that defeat. There's going to be smarting. What imagines Gregor Townsend will give a large majority of these players another chance to redeem themselves. I do think, though, they were weakened by not having Sione Tupulotu as a go-to reference point in midfield. It would be like taking Bundiaki out of Ireland, really. And they ran out of puff and ran out of gas, and they lost their way when with the 14-point swing with the disallowed try and the try for Italy. And yeah, they will be kicking themselves, but you'd imagine they will be seeking redemption.
Any changes? Would you make Henderson in for McCarthy, for example?
I think there's an argument for it, for sure. I was surprised by some people giving out about Henderson's performance. I thought he certainly is a very good... He organises the line-out very well. He's got a bit of heft himself. Big Young Joe had a quite enough game. England lined him up, saw him coming. And he hasn't really scaled the heights of Marseille in any of the three games since then. That's one option.
Weakens our line-out relative to Henderson.
Maybe. Well, he's a very good lifter. But yeah, I think you're right. I think he does maybe on balance. Henderson is the more experienced line-out operator for sure. I think Peter O'Mahony did not have his best game for sure, but I think he's the captain for the Six Nations, and I think I don't, I agree with Shane Horgan. I don't think you should throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think this is probably the game to give him a good last shot at. He'll be fired up for this game for sure against the Scots. We know the antipathy between Scotland and Ireland, between Munster and Glasgow, between Finn Russell and several Munster Scottish players, and Peter O'Mahony personally. Mm. They'll be up for it. This is a real Celtic rivalry, this is. I know Ireland keep winning, which puts a question mark over the word rivalry, but there is an edge to this clash for sure. I think that it'll just be interesting to see what they do at right wing. Do they bring in Jordan Larmour as a straight swap, or do they consider Gary Ringrose there? And do they go with 5-3 or not? But I think you're right. I think there could be well an argument for Henderson starting.
Jerry, Shane, thanks a mil.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a million.
What does it look like? A turd up, is it?
Yobs. There's an incredible podcast on at the moment produced by the second captains.
Biggest load of bollocks. The second captain's show in Ireland.
We're now getting to that point now where we are inspiring.
The second captain's podcast. Pretty much we've done for the last 20 years. Be role models to kids.
Hey, Pat, do you want to split?
I shall just give Virgin their full tagline here. Rob Kearney joins us as Virgin Media Television celebrates Mega March, their biggest ever month of live sport, with Guinness Six Nations, Republic of Ireland International Friendlies, Cheltenham Festival, and much more. Murph, I haven't prepped you for this, but you seem in great form today, so give us an on-the-hoof one of these. I mean, the abacus out for this one.
Well, the winners of all the eight ties go through to the quarterfinals.
This is a Six Nations table
permutation. Yeah, who can win the championship?
Four teams can win the championship. France can still win this. France can still win this if they get a try bonus point against England, and Ireland don't get anything from the Scotland game. Now, there is a small points differential that needs to be set aside here. 76 points. But
so if we lost by 20 and they won by...
54. 55. Scotland, as long as France hammer England by 30-plus points and Scotland beat Ireland by a little less than that, then France will be your Six Nations champions on Saturday night. Obviously, Ireland are on 16, England are on 12, Scotland 11, France 11. So at a draw or a win, obviously, is enough for Ireland to finish the season as Six Nations.
Salvage. I think I'm going to be arrogant and smug and say Ireland are definitely going to get a draw.
Yeah. Scotland need to stick a good number of points on us.
We're giving up on rugby if that happens. So if Scotland come and beat us, bury us and win the Six Nations.
If they beat us by 39 points.
Yeah, no.
Remember Dan Parks when we were like, "Ah, oh, genie, we've missed out on the championship. Stupid triple crown."
Yeah, that was.
And Dan Parks then took that away from us.
They didn't win by 39 points. Like, I wish we if you lose by 39, we're all quitting rugby. Simon, you have to do it as well.
If Ireland get no game points in losing to Scotland and England get a try bonus point in beating France, then England are your Six Nations champions. So England do have something to play for. I mean, the game will have already happened, so they'll know whether they have something to play for or not. But yes, an England win with a try bonus point and Ireland get nothing, it is England's tournament.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen. Thanks, Ken. Thank you, Simon.
Thanks, lads.
Thanks for listening. The Second Captain's Podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network. As you know, our World Service members hear all the podcasts with no ads. Ken's dog, Ted, is ready to leave the room as it is the end of the podcast, so we might as well all follow Ted at the door.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's World Service.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.